Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I don't know exactly what that was, but welcome to Ringside Wrap this Wednesday night here on the TorturedWrestlingHistory.com radio network. I am Mike Sempervivi, and I'm joined by Les Thatcher. And unfortunately, again this week, we are without Rich Tate, who is still kind of recovering from everything that's been going on the last couple weeks. Had to get everything in order, so it's just going to be Les and I tonight talking about the world of professional wrestling. And Les, how are you doing tonight?
Wow, not so good and tired, and you and I are going to cut this short too because I didn't know Rich was going to be here, and I just wanted to check in and tell you guys I was going to bail out on you early, and I'll explain to you why. I'm tired to start with, but I've spent the day with eye surgeons at Cincinnati Eye Institute. Started out as a general exam to see about, you know, cataract surgery, which is something, you know, most everybody has to go through when they get older. Anyway, long story short, it's called low-angle glaucoma, which is not uncommon in farsighted people. The drainage canal in the eye is very small, and like they couldn't dilate my eyes to measure them and everything for the cataracts, or because if the eyes can't drain that fluid, then it backs up. There's a laundry list of, you know, but it's painful, and it could actually cause blindness at some point. And so anyway, I've got to renew my driver's license before the end of October. So all this has got to be done. So starting next Thursday, over the next 5 weeks, next Thursday they do one eye with they go into the iris. To open, basically put a hole in the iris so that there's no fear that the fluid's backing up and not being able to drain. And next week they do one eye, and the following Thursday do another eye, and then there has to be a down period. Then I go in with the cataract surgeon they finally can dilate the eyes and measure it, and then go back in, and they do one eye at a time as well. So it's going to be and a couple of those are going to be Wednesdays. So anyway, I'm kind of bummed out, Mike. It's just, you know, over. I mean, I had no idea that any of this was, you know, even possible. I mean, you know, I knew what glaucoma was, but the plus, I guess, if there is one, as they told me, was standard. I don't know what standard glaucoma, but. You know, sometimes you have to take drops and medication for the rest of your life. With this, it's a matter of laser surgery, and that cures it. But if that's not done, I mean, the cataract surgeon was, you know, even fearful to dilate my eyes, because if they'd have put that fluid in there and it wouldn't have drained, then you could have, you know, had to come in here. We'd have had to emergency cut it open, you know.
Ooh, jeez.
Yeah. So they're going to be screwing my eyes over the next, I guess, 5 weeks, you know, anyway, through mid-October. And I'm sitting in that back and forth between one surgeon and another surgeon. I'm just kind of wore out, you know.
I think you got every right to be. What's the turnaround time as far as full recovery and being able to go, because I know that what it is with driver's licenses and all that sort of stuff. What's the turnaround time before, okay, you're looking good?
With all these things, to go into the iris and punch the hole in there obviously there's more delicate and more detailed than me saying punch a hole in the iris of my eye, but that's an outpatient thing. Well, it's all actually outpatient, but you know, there's medication in terms of eye drops that had to be used through all four of these surgeries. And with this, I don't guess they have to patch my eye, but with the cataract surgery, you got a couple days, at least a couple days downtime where you can't get your heart rate up, obviously. And then there's, you know, drops and you have to sleep with the eye that they only do one eye at a time. You have to sleep with the eyes covered so that you can't inadvertently, you know, stick your finger in it or poke it with something and create a problem. So I can't actually train with anybody. I can stand around and talk to my clients, but then I ask them about that too. But like after each surgery, I've got to have I've got to take one day because it's the prep for the surgery is longer than the surgery. And then you can go out and grab a bite to eat or sit around and twiddle your thumbs, and because a couple hours later they want to look at it again to be sure that it, you know, it worked properly. So I mean, it's not like you can go. So it's a whole day and then another day, at least one other day down on that side of that. So that's the other thing I've got to do too, is get in and plan around my clients and see who I can move to what days. And anyway, it's a pain in the ass. That's the best way to say it. Well, actually, a pain in the eyes, I suppose. But it's sure to hell beats blindness. That's for sure.
Now, have you worn glasses your whole life, or just because I was it in the ring wrestling as far as your eyes go? Because always, you know, stories, of course, legendary Stan Hansen being so near, so he couldn't see anything, and just, you know, he was all over the place. But how long have your eyes, how long have you had problems with them, and did you wear them when you were wrestling?
Well, no, I honestly, I didn't. That's funny, and the cataract surgeon today looked at me quizzically, too, when I explained the history. In the fourth grade, I started having headaches, you know, pretty frequent headaches at school, and so then they decided that my eyes were, you know, were the problem, and it was called lazy eye, and there was actual exercises that you did. They put a hat pin with a big, you know, big round ball on the end of it, in the end of the rubber eraser on the end of a pencil, and then you'd hold it out and bring it in toward your nose slowly and actually cross your, I mean, it was to strengthen the eyes. And I wore glasses from the fourth grade to, it was my freshman year, and then I never wore glasses again until, I guess it was in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s until I needed them again. So there was that stretch of time, you know, from my freshman year in high school up until I was in my, you know, late 30s, early 40s that I never wore glasses, and then I've worn them ever since. But I never even realized this cataract thing until back in June. I went, you know, I thought it was time to upgrade my glasses, and the optometrist said these will work for a while, but you honestly should have cataract surgery. So I thought, with having to renew my driver's license, you know, it's probably best to do it beforehand, because he said it might be iffy otherwise. The cataract surgeon said today, he said it would be, you know, very borderline. So, and God love the people at Cincinnati Eye Institute. With that in mind, they that was the other thing too. They said, they scheduled me as tight as they could to be sure that, you know, I was, the surgery was done and I was healed, and before that, you know, I needed to go renew my driver's license. God love them. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. You know, I think, you know, somebody said, well, they make a lot of money. Well, it's, you know, but they don't have to bend over backwards necessarily for me either, you know. But when I explained the situation, they, in fact, the doctor that's going to do the glaucoma surgery, this is a big, it's all in one, I mean, it's Cincinnati Eye Institute is like three floors, and I mean, it's, that's all they do there, you know, all sorts of things to do with eyes. And so they called over to the glaucoma department from the cataract department and said, can you get him in now and take a look and then schedule him as quick as possible? And then they brought me back over there to set the schedule up and lay the whole program out for me. And anyway, that's the deal. So,
well, I don't want to hold you up too long tonight, Les. I'm not sure how long you wanted to go or not, but
well, you know, I figured I'd go a little bit with you guys. Like I say, I didn't realize, you know, Rich wasn't going to make it either, so I was going to say, well, you know, I'll hang with the two of you for a half hour or so. And but we, you know, we can go a little bit. I'm just strung out, you know, and wrung out, I guess, you know, from the emotional part of this. And not, I mean, and not really at first. I was a little scared, you know. And I thought, damn, what have I got myself into here? But
well, I love how doctors, they do a wonderful job of, like, they explain it to you, and, you know, they tell you, don't WebMD yourself and look online and try to diagnose yourself or get too excited about things. But I remember I had a brain cyst rupture near my pituitary gland, and I did not know that. It ruptured, and I started going to Johns Hopkins and everything, and, you know, they're talking about doing routine brain surgery. And,
wow.
And this is, but, well, you know, they yeah, nothing to worry about, and it's just like I'm trying to look at, imagine what my face must look like staring back at them as they're just talking about routine brain surgery. And there's nothing really to worry about. We do this often. It's like routine brain surgery. I guess, you know, God bless America and God bless medicine that they've gotten to the point where brain surgery can be routine. But it's, you know, anytime it's just daunting when you're at somebody's mercy like that for your health, for anything, especially like your eyes.
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, when they said, you know, well, you know, the worst case scenario with this glaucoma thing, if those passages are get blocked and they can't drain off, it, you know, it's going to swell and you're going to be in horrible pain and they're going to have to do emergency surgery. And if it not done in a proper, you know, right amount of time, it actually could promote blindness. And I wait a friggin' minute here, you know, this. But and you know, but yeah, it's my wife had the LASIK surgery, you know, so she didn't have to wear glasses, and I watched that on a TV monitor, and I thought, I'd rather not, thank you very much. But now I'm going to go through it twice, each eye twice in the next 5 weeks. So, but again, if it cures it, and you know, and like, you know, like they said with this car, you know, there's several different kinds of glaucoma, which I'm not, you know, I listen to all this, and they've given me brochures and everything, and I'm not going to rattle off all the scientific data, but, you know, there's some that just persist, and there's no actual cure for it. It's not something you can diagnose. It happens or it doesn't happen. And they said, if there is a plus to this, is the fact that once this laser surgery is done, then it's done. You know, you don't have, they do a follow-up checkup, you know, but it's not like you have to take a certain kind of medication the rest of your life or anything. It shouldn't be a problem after this. So anyway, that's my medical report for this weekend. Oh, whatever.
Well,
whatever.
I'll go with bad puns aplenty here and wonder if my eyes deceived me Monday night. I don't know if you had a chance to see Raw on Monday night or hear about it, but it was, I got to be honest, I was more up on this show, far more than I was the week prior, as they kind of did their, and again, no matter whether, I guess if anyone agrees where they're, how they've gotten to this point with this story, they're at least tying some loose ends together with kind of shoring up the whole story with the text messages a little bit more, and at least we know what we're getting, you know, a month out from the pay-per-view with Cena and Del Rio, which, I got to say this, I think, and I'm not sure if I said it here last week or I said it on Observer Live or both even, but the only good thing is for me as far as Alberto Del Rio getting this title reign is they are actually having him win clean, which is good, and it will give John Cena some of his manhood back because, you know, people at best don't like Alberto Del Rio and they boo, but I still am not, even though there's this little swell now of approval for Del Rio, again, we talked about it, people aren't reacting to him like they probably should, but I guess if there's a silver lining in this, John Cena is not a cartoon character, well, is not as much of one anymore, at least they're trying to not overwrite this stuff for him. He's being a man, as you say every week, he's got his manhood.
Well, you know, I think this puts Cena in a better position. But, you know, the thing with Del, I'm not ready, still not ready for, if Del Rio's, well, I should, if there is a plus, his whole I'm smiling and thing, and then, like, for example, then that whole 180-degree turn, like when he started putting the boots to Cena Monday night, you know, the viciousness look on his face and everything. But, again, it takes time. Those are subtleties which I like, but you can't sell people on those subtleties in a heartbeat, you know, or overnight. And they're obviously not sold on him as yet. And again, I still feel that Punk should have been allowed to wear that belt for a while to just, you know, to prove he was a player, because I have no personal issue with Kevin Nash. I know Kevin. I find him humorous and glib and on and on and on. But, you know, not that he was ever a ballet dancer, but at this point he's not that mobile. Well, the finish to the match on Monday night, it was too slow and belabored. I mean, when he came out on the ramp and walked slowly, I mean, it just kept Punk away. I mean, to me, it should have been before he ever opened his mouth on that microphone. Again, you know, I know I sound like a broken record, but to me, it's the subtleties and the details and the fine tuning of these things that make them work. It's not just that it's here. I've got this idea. Okay, but now let's fine tune the idea. What if he'd have walked down that ramp and got within 10 feet of that ring before he ever opened his mouth? Then Punk turns, you can count, before you can count to 10, he turns back and Cena hooks him. But but the other thing was just, why are you standing there with your back to the guy in the ring who, if you don't beat him, you don't get your rematch? The other thing is, when people get rematches, again, I'm going into the details here. I'm crossing T's and dotting I's that they didn't cross or dot. You walked out last month and said, hey, so-and-so beat me for Intercontinental title. I want a rematch tonight. You got it. Okay, cool. Let's move on. And now all of a sudden, hey, you know, a rematch is not something you just get in the moment. Well, it was last month, Triple H. Why isn't it this month? You know, consistency, yeah. Mike, consistency. The other thing is, if you really break it down, there's a pecking order here. Punk beat Cena. So now Cena is entitled to a rematch with Punk, but Del Rio beat Punk, so Punk is actually more entitled to the first rematch with Del Rio, because that's the guy that stripped him of the title. Am I right?
Yes. Absolutely right.
Again, cross your T's and dot your I's. The one thing here's a subtlety that I've sat and thought about for a while. Going back to the week before, when John Laurinaitis invited Devin Nash into his office, he wanted to talk to him. Thank God there wasn't a camera following them in there. So we can only surmise, guess, you know, speculate what went on there. But then what happened this week sort of exonerates Triple H, A, but we're still not sure. See, they're leaving up in the air a little bit, and it's obvious that, or I shouldn't say it's obvious, but we also kind of speculate that Laurinaitis and Nash are in cahoots. That's not bad. What is bad is, again, not thinking past the end of your little schmeckle or the end of your nose or the end of something, is if we find out that Laurinaitis is actually trying to undermine the new COO. And when the new COO finds that out, I can't speak for the new CEO, but if I were the COO or anybody else, I think common sense would say, you fire the bastard. But that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? So,
well, it would be a hard thing to try to juggle if you weren't going to fire him for real. So, yes. It would probably be the wrong thing to do, or it would be, yeah, you leave yourself open to it not making any sense.
So, yeah, it's kind of like the guy who gets, you know, well, like Cena gets fired and doesn't go anywhere, it sounds good until you start to, you know, to take the rough edges off of it, and then it doesn't sound so damn good, because when you try, to me, I've been taught, and I've been doing this for 50 years, and I'm never going to change it, and nobody can tell me I'm wrong, because I don't believe, I shouldn't say I'm wrong, but all the people kind of like the Garibaldis and Eddie Grahams and the people like that who kind of maybe knew what the hell they were doing. You know, you think I'm stupid, but realize this stupid old man's got a good hell of a good memory, and I sat with some of the most brilliant minds in this business over the past half century. it only works if you parallel it with real life. You know, that's it's like Kevin Sullivan says that there were times when he was, you know, in the office in Florida, he'd go to Eddie and say, "Hey, I got this hell of an idea." "What is it?" Eddie'd say, "Well, here, this and this and this." And Eddie said, "Where do you go from there?" And Kevin would sit and think, "Wow, maybe that wasn't such a great idea after all."
Yeah.
Because it had nowhere, you had nowhere to go with it, you know. And that's my problem. I mean, you're really not going to fire Johnny Laurinaitis to begin with. So, but you've involved him. So the best case scenario is you can pretend like you fired him and he's never can be seen on camera again, which is good, bad, or indifferent. I don't even care. But I'm just saying you're obviously not going to fire him. It's like, you know, years ago when you worked the loser leave the territory, loser leave town. You know, I could beat Mike Sempervivi and he could go to Oklahoma and I could stay in Georgia, and most, unless you're a truck driver, you're not going to figure that out. Well, that's not feasible anymore. And especially, this is a high-profile guy, you know, on your payroll. I mean, he's a stockholder. He's, you know, and your company is publicly held, so it's not like you can hide his name, you know. It's going to be out there. So, but like I say, when him and Nash talked, we can only speculate what they talked about. That I like, you know, without the hidden camera thing. It's just, you know, again, it comes back to little details. I don't like Kofi and Bourne as tag team champions. I like the fact if Kofi were built like Jennifer Hudson's husband, I'd like Kofi as they're both good entertainers. They're both good acrobats. They're both good athletes. They're not my tag team champions. Now, I'll tell you who are my tag team champions from Monday night: Truth and Miz.
Well, that seems to need a little transitional reign to get it over to them, which would make complete sense.
Well, if all Kofi and Bourne are the transitional champions, I'm cool with that. But you're not going to build, on these two guys. They're colorful. Again, they're entertainers. They're colorful. They're not, you know, they're not necessarily tag teams. I mean, it's not a knock. It's just everybody shouldn't be wearing a damn belt. You know, and these guys are more what we called in the old days white meat baby faces. They're the guys that you use to get heat on The Miz and Truth. They're the guys who grandmothers cry and little girls cry about. And if somebody tells me that doesn't work anymore, then I guess John Cena must be dead because it's worked with him. You know,
like you were saying before about some things are timeless. They always work. Yes. That's why you do them.
You know, so these guys are, you know, see, but to me, Kofi and Bourne could be with somebody. I mean, what I like about Miz and Truth is they're sort of yin and yang. I mean, they're different, yet they fit together for me. And it's like you were asking me about Morrison last. I can't tell you why, you know, and it never crossed my mind. If you'd have said, held a gun in my head and said, put two heels together as a tag team, I probably wouldn't have come up with these guys. But standing out there now, if they sophisticate it and fine-tune it a little bit, Mike, Miz is, you know, Truth plays the doofus, but he's a vicious doofus, and Miz is the brains of the outfit. And that works for me. But still, you know, I would have rather seen Kofi and or Bourne with a more solid a guy who's more base, you know, like I don't know, hell, there isn't hardly anybody like that right now. But if Regal were still being utilized, you know, if this were a number of years ago, Regal would have been a good Bob Holly, one of these guys with Holly. What they tried to do with Holly and Cody, and could have been successful had they given enough time. You could do this. This is you know, Kofi or Bourne is the guy who is the young guy sitting at the knee, basically, of the grizzled veteran, battle-scarred veteran, and they're the guys that the heels get the heat on before they give the hot tag to the, you know, they're the Johnny Weaver to his George Becker sort of thing. So, well, you know, but I little things like that, you know, and I hope they rebuild the tag team division. I honestly do. I think it's a plus for the company. But you know, I would have saved the rubber match with Cena and Punk for this till this next. You know, when Triple H said 4 weeks from now, I thought he's going to put their rubber match in there and the winner gets a shot, which, you know, you got, damn it, we talked about this last week. You got to make the people wait. I mean, you know, Christmas is the 25th of December. If I start opening gifts in October, what the hell, you know?
Why is it special?
Yeah. Why do we get, when we get to the 25th, there's nothing special about it, right?
Yeah, that weekend too, and people got to remember this, and mostly the pure wrestling fans here won't care, but it's something that you got to take into account. On the 17th, they got a UFC show that weekend. You have no boxing match that weekend. I think it's the Floyd Mayweather pay-per-view, which, you know, they're charging $60. That's an event. CNN's going to run footage. There's going to be You're already going into that weekend for the traditional matted sports way, way at a disadvantage. One of the things you had was that great rubber match because whatever you want to say technically or anything about those two matches, the one in Chicago and the one at SummerSlam, Punk and Cena had been fantastic together. And Monday was really good, too. That could have waited. And especially when you're going in as a disadvantage, and this is one of my whole problems with, it's like, you got a lot of pay-per-views here. Don't you want to extract as much money as possible? This thing could go on for a month. Punk and Cena and, I mean, Del Rio up to a point, but definitely Punk and Cena, if not, they can talk. That's, you know, they can talk for a month and it won't get stale or old. And you know, you're lucky to have that with no Jericho there, with no, you know, pick and choose your guys that are there. You should have let them do it going into it because, again, this is a mistake when you want people to spend $55.
Yeah. You know, the crazy thing here is the way they're keeping Punk gets a shot at Nash, Nash gets a shot at Punk, but they never really get into a battle. And I'm thinking, you know what? That's cool. Why didn't you do that with Cena and Punk? Why didn't you do it, you know, with so-and-so and so? I mean, you know, we could go back and rerun all this stuff and say, why the hell didn't you do it then? You know? Well, first of all, we know it's not going to be a great match. If you know, the only thing that I thought, and believe me, I'm not smoking dope or anything when I say this, but and it wouldn't be a good match, but Laurinaitis and Nash against Triple H and Punk.
Really, would you do it that soon?
Well, you know, I mean, physically, it wouldn't be a great match, but but the storyline works, right?
Yeah, I was thinking point of view of Sean Waltman comes in.
Yeah, Triple H, supposed, you know, lieutenant and his best friend have conspired to make him look like a fool, and and it's not like Punk has to apologize. You know, it's like, hey, you're putting the COO back in a pair of tights, and the whole thing is, hey, Punk, you've got an axe to grind here, and so do I. Let's grind it together.
Huh. That would work, although I would just draw, again, just because you got so much stuff leading in before Survivor Series, where I swear that's where I would actually do that. It's just, the thing I thought was like, man, Nash, who moves so slow, it's like, okay, well, obviously it's not going to be Scott Hall. But one guy that is always around is Sean Waltman. And I'm sure, I don't know, again, I haven't seen Waltman in Mexico. I haven't seen a whole lot of him in the last couple of years. I know he's, you know, had ups and downs, but apparently he's clean and good and everything. It was at the Hall of Fame. And probably could have a good match with Punk. And I was thinking, do you instead have him do it, or do you have him, at least him and Nash or something like that, where they stack the deck against Punk, but you have a guy in there that, because again, Kevin Nash is Kevin Nash. This is a man who tore his quad getting into the ring one time. I mean, he's at that point where, again, Punk is really good and they can battle it out a little bit, but I think it would be tough where you need somebody in there. And then I'm thinking, it's too bad I'm thinking about Sean Waltman, because there's probably somebody on the roster now that could probably use being in this position. And I want to ask you, what do you think about that? Because, you know, we talked about last week, and you brought up, like, the way TNA does things, and they're doing the exact same thing with Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger, where you have two guys who, I swear, if you were going to put Kofi, if they were going to keep the tag belts on Kofi and Evan Bourne, I would put them with Swagger and Ziggler, because Swagger and Ziggler need to work on things as far as connection with the crowd, and Ziggler's a little bit better, obviously better than Swagger. And Evan Bourne and Kofi could use amateur wrestling, you know, getting ridden on the mat and actually having to deal with stuff, which would make them better, and I swear that would work. But they're doing that stuff with them, and I'm thinking, God, you know, this would be a good position for a Dolph Ziggler to be in if he wasn't saddled with Vicky, and I love Vicky. But he doesn't.
You know, that whole thing,
the breakout
Monday night with Vicky, you know, falling down, and it was poorly done. It just there, and but see, there to me, it has nothing to do with Swagger's in ring thing or Ziggler's, but they weren't good at what they did there. You know, and again, I'm Del Rio's more polished than either one of those guys in terms of, you know, what happens between the ropes. Those, you know, is she going to put them together? You know, but that's the other thing, too. Why does everybody have to be in conflict? I mean, you know, it's why don't two guys, hey, you know what? We're not getting too much of a look here as singles. We're not getting noticed. They're you know, why not play off of the, here we go again. Why not play off of reality instead of bullshit? Hey, They're reforming the tag team division. You don't have a steady partner. I don't. We both have, you know, let's give this a try. Maybe not. I mean, it's not like, hey, we're going to, you know, the old nonsense of we're going to rule the tag team division. Well, how do you know that? You've never been in a tag team. But let's give it a try. Let's see what's happening here. You know, we both have worn single belts. You know, let's see if we can put another notch and, you know, another star on our, you know, resume or whatever, and give the tag team. I mean, there's a million ways. You know, one of the things I like about America's Got Talent is the emotion that you pick up from real things. You know, there's a beautiful young lady on. I don't even like opera, Mike. I mean, when I say I don't despise it, I'm not with opera like Jim Rome is with wrestling. But if I never hear it again, I'm cool with that. But I can sit and look at this beautiful young lady the rest of my life. I mean, and here's the thing, is she had just sort of quit trying to, her fiancé was killed in a car wreck. And she just, because somebody said, you should try this. She tried out for America's Got Talent. She has this beautiful operatic voice. I mean, just fantastic, you know. And but the story is but it all blends together. The story is so good, you know. There's these kids. I forget where the hell they're from, but they're not. You know, they're working and sending money home to their homeland, to their families, to help support them there. They have just menial jobs, but these are great acrobats, and you know, I mean, not that the same stories work in wrestling related, but. You know, again, it comes back to, you know, what really is going on and how do you tug at people's. And I was sitting here watching America's Got Talent last night with some of the, you know, and how these kids are just being so sincere and how, wow, I'm getting a break and this is so cool. And I'm thinking, you know, it's real. And if it's not, if somebody's a well of reality, then these kids are 10,000 times better actors than any of the wrestlers I know. And we do things, we just overdo them and make them so friggin' hokey that you couldn't believe it if you wanted to. You know, and again, somebody say, well, you know, nobody believes wrestling. I know that. Jesus Christ, nobody has to tell me that. You know, they don't believe a lot of things, but drama is part, you know, whether it's TV series or a movie, you buy, or a book you read, you buy in because they draw you in. And you know, I think we proved.
Yeah, then you want to believe.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, you forget about your stupid boss or the fact you owe taxes or, you know, or your property taxes have gone up or the cost of gas has gone up again or whatever. I want to live in this. It's why you go to the ballpark, you know. You want to be Joey Votto or Albert Pujols, or you go to basketball because you want to be Kobe Bryant or whoever the hell. It's, you know, you're looking at their problems and not and forgetting about yours, or you're getting behind this guy to beat the bad guy because, you know, that's, in essence, you beating your boss or whatever. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I just don't understand why it has to be so freaking melodramatic and so hokey. You know, is it because, well, we're entertainment? I don't give a shit. You're lacing up boots and you're putting on tights and you're in a ring with ropes on four sides. You're a friggin' wrestler. You know, I don't care if you call it, tongue hockey or something. I don't care. But it's still wrestling, and you sell it like wrestling. You package it like wrestling, and it is wrestling. You know, it's just, it's friggin' frustrating at times. It's just, you know, because, you know, and somebody said, well, you know, they bought Cena 2 months ago, right? Bought it hook, line, and sinker. And we've diluted it to a point now that it's, I don't know if you can get it back there, at least not the way it's going. I mean, thank God that when I say this, I have no personal issue with Stephanie McMahon. She's a fine young lady as far as I'm concerned. Any time that I ever spoke with her, it was, I mean, you know, it's not personal. I don't have anything personal with John Laurinaitis. I know that people do. I don't know if John and I always seem to communicate now how if he talked about me behind my back or hates. I don't know that, but I mean, personally, I have no issue there. But it's just, you know, I don't need to see her involved. I don't need to see Triple H being a, you know, the dastardly COO again. Jesus Christ, we've done that. In fact, the, you know, I think his subtleties are good. The way, you know, he said to Punk, hey, don't push me. You know, I may be one thing, but that, you know, don't step over the line here. And the way he pulled, you know, Nash off and saying, hey, you can't do that here. You know, I like that. I think all that's very good. It's just some of the other stuff around it is just bland and tasteless or useless. I shouldn't say tasteless. It's not tasteless. But it's just, you know, there's so much there that would be good if they just let it be good. Just like, you know, hit Punk and Cena. Hey, they're going to have a rubber match. We're going to have it there in 15 minutes. Oh, okay, whatever. We're giving it away. Why? Jesus Christ, you've just drawn two houses with it. Why are you giving it away?
It's amazing. I mean, this is, again, this with they're amazing with being walking contradictions. And that, again, we've had this crap with the announcers and this garbage with JR and Cole going back off the rails again after a couple of pay-per-views ago. It seeming like that sort of stuff was over. And then this week it's over again. See how simple that is? The announcing, when it became noise, and they still have this problem on SmackDown with the way they have Cole and Booker T and Matthews, and it just doesn't, I mean, it just doesn't work. I would rather hear William Regal in Florida and NXT does a, that's who I would rather hear, and he gets things over far better. But again, you know, but at the same time, again, they don't get Daniel Bryan to do because they're ripping him in commentary. It's like, it's amazing how they are so good at, again, so good at some things and so bad at others, and why they have a TNA philosophy somewhat. And I have to bring this up. And as you said, tasteless. Do you have any opinion or thoughts at all on one Matt Hardy situation, which is, you know, just amazingly tragic and stupid.
You know, I find it, you know what, again, my personal contact with Matt has always been positive. I've seen him in the Hardys worked the Pillman show, the last Pillman show we did. They partied with us. I didn't see them in any horrible situation. I mean, now, you know, out of my sight, God, no, I don't know what happened at all, but I'm just, you know, I just think it's very sad. Here's, you know, and he's just, and this whole tweet and thing, and it just, he just makes himself look worse all the time. You know, there's a time not to say anything. You know, I saw angels and I'm going to tell you the real story is this. You've been arrested. You've got more than one ticket. You've been fired from two companies. You're in denial about whatever. I don't know because I'm not personally involved, but my God, why make it, you know, why? And the part that, whether it's Foley and Flair bickering like children, or Hogan and Warrior, or the Hardys doing this silly shit, it's bad for the business. You know,
yeah.
Somebody will say, why don't anybody respect professional wrestling? Well, here's a few reasons. You know, we act like fools on camera. We're just talking about, you know, some hokey things that make no sense to anybody. And then stuff like this, you know, that TMZ, gossip columns pick up and stuff. You know, what do you... You know, and one of the biggest things that happens up in Stanford is they keep saying, perception is reality. Perception, well, then you're making your bed. You got to sleep in it, man. You know, I hate seeing this thing with Matt. But I'm going to tell you the truth. If I don't care what company it is, if I got the power to hire and fire, and I see this YouTube thing, of them guys stoned out of their minds, zapping the girl with a taser and each other, they're gone then. I don't give a damn how many T-shirts we've ordered that, you know, that we haven't sold yet.
Why are they bringing Jeff back now?
Jeff is coming back. They're doing this taping in Huntsville. But
Matt can go get help now. He's fired.
Yeah.
He can take advantage of the WWE program. And again, I'm not that man. I haven't been in. I can say this. Obviously, he needs some sort of help. They can provide that. They bring Jeff Hardy off an indefinite suspension. And it's like, I know you're under the radar and all those things, and you're not held to the same standard as WWE or anything. Jesus Christ, you're bringing back a guy who's been indefinitely suspended, who went to New Japan and killed a guy's basically year with just the crappy match he had, was out of it, had two issues of pay-per-views, including going out there losing in 90 seconds. And after this happens with his brother, which is on top of problems, and he still doesn't have his own fixed as far as the finality of his court case, Jesus Christ, how can anyone actually, with good faith, then go, how can you say anything positive about TNA at all? And it kills me to say that, because I've always been a big Jeff Jarrett fan, and there's people there that I like, but, I mean, and I don't know what his sway is or anything now, but Jesus, it's so transparent. It's gross. To me, it's gross.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that I thought about with the Jeff thing, too, here, is they're doing a double taping, which I think is stupid to begin with. End of story. You're going to tape 8 weeks worth of television. You know, I think Bischoff and his brilliance of going down, you know, to Orlando and doing that with WCW showed the lack of that being making sense, because guys get hurt. You know, shit happens, as they say. But here's the thing with Jeff. Before that last tape is aired, of those eight weeks, whatever the hell they're taping, he's going to be gone to court. What if he's in jail? How do you explain that? Hey, Jeff forfeited this match because he's now serving 3 to 5 at Leavenworth. I mean, what? You know, why not wait and find out what happens with that court? I mean, I don't care what his lawyer may tell you. Well, we've cut a deal. You know, I'm paranoid enough or cautious enough after 50 years of the chicanery of this silly business to begin with that I'll believe it when I see it. We'll sit down and talk about when we're going to book him next after I see that deal has gotten, that he's not putting some time in behind bars. And when I say that, you know, I'm not wishing that on the kid, but there's a strong possibility of that, Mike. You know, so why are you putting him on tape? You can't, it's not like you're going to race him and put somebody else in his place in that match, you know.
Well, it's like, even if you explain away, well, you know, if they get called on the carpet by him, I don't think they would, because I don't think anybody cares enough to. But it's like, what they're going to say probably is, well, it's a TV show. And, you know, and then and we taped in advance. Why would anyone want to watch that? I don't know. I just, the show is so painful, and it's to the point now where it's like, you know, I have to
be honest with you.
Live. It's like, do I have to watch it? Because if I don't,
no,
I'll watch it.
I haven't watched. I listened to Brian rant on Observer. I go over to PW and Snyder and listen to Dave Shear and Stu Carapola rant. I DVR it, but I honestly haven't watched that show in a couple weeks. I thought, why beat yourself up about this? It just, you know, it doesn't make any sense. You know,
they can draw me back when, because there's people, enough people I believe, because as a whole, you know, the people I trust and, you know, the people when I've watched and I've matched up opinions of, okay, maybe I'm missing something here, you know, what did other people say? And everybody always says the same thing. So when they start turning people again, you know, okay, you know, I gave it every shot in the world. I remember I used to write these things. I started with the Pro Wrestling Torch because the TNA pay-per-views were starting, weekly pay-per-views, and I was always such a big fan of Jarrett's. And I saw a thing on there. It's like, you know, if anybody wants to watch them and review them, well, Jesus, yeah, I'll do that. Okay, I have no experience at all, but I'm going to be ordering these things anyway. Why not? And I defended TNA for so long, over so long, of like, got to give him a chance, we'll give him a chance here, where, you know, now in 2011, God, however many years later, when did it start, 2002? And the way it is,
like,
and listening to Jerry Jarrett, who I respect immensely and everything, and going down the line, it's like, you got to prove you can get me back. Because right now, you're just a bad TV show, and there's way too many bad TV shows out there that I'm already not watching.
Yeah. It's not the you know, there's good talent. I mean, everybody's got good and bad talent. I mean, you know, I don't care if it's the New York Yankees, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Dallas Mavericks, the Boston Patriots, or TNA or WWE. I mean, there's good and bad on, you know, on everybody's roster. But it's just so nonsensical what they do down there. You know, one minute Jeff Jarrett hates Mexico, and the next minute he's the leader of the Spanish invasion, for Christ's sake. And, you know, I mean, come on. You know, it's just none of it makes any sense. And I'll tell you, the last thing that I saw, and I didn't watch the whole show, was Flair and Sting, and then Flair and Hogan. And Ric Flair is a personal friend. I mean, I knew Hogan before he was Hogan. I knew him when he was Sterling Gold. He worked in Oxford territory for us. I've met Sting. We've never worked a territory or anything together, but I've met Steve. I have nothing. Again, it's not a personal issue. Guys, it's over. You know, let's throw all the tights in the middle of the friggin' floor and the boots and burn them. It's, you know, it's, and Paul Heyman made a comment about how many, you know, if you got 20 legends, then none of them stand out. You know, if you got one legend, then that person, you know. And that's what I always felt about, you know, a lot of things. Now, talk about subtleties. The first set of kick pads that ever showed up in my company was B.J. Whitmer. And I said, okay, everybody see those kick pads? Okay. As of tonight, that's the last person that's going to be wearing those. Period. That's it. He's your Shawn Michaels for today. I don't want everybody dressed alike. I don't want everybody doing the same shit over and over again. It's just then it's meaningless, you know. It's if I ran WWE, Punk wouldn't be taping his hands. Then why doesn't everybody? Because we're all smart enough to know that under those gloves in MMA or under the gloves in a boxing match, your hands are taped.
Yeah.
So why does he get that unfair advantage?
Yeah, that was a stipulation in matches.
Yeah, well, we used to have. I tell you, when I first started, you know, dealing with the indies, when I first became a trainer and a booker for the small company that I left and started my own company later, I had a kid. I said, you got to take that off. Why? I said, is your hands hurt? No. I said, then take it off. Why? I said, because I may want to have a taped fist match, and if you're out there with it all the time, then there's no. Then what the hell's why do I have a taped fist match? I have one every week. You know, but I mean, just the subtleties of it, Mike. It's just, you know, little things drive me nuts. Bourne jumped
how,
up.
How was it for those guys that you had to strip off their, you know, the Emperor's clothes and you had to take that stuff away from them? Did they, how many guys just had such a mental block of like, and granted, you know, for guys that have been wrestling for a little while or had been to other places or training centers or things like that, when they got to you, I mean, when you took that stuff off them, did they, some of them just freeze up like, man, what am I going to do? They felt
naked. Well, they got their asses on their shoulders, but, you know, here's the thing. They you know, they can say about me what they want. I'm an old son of a bitch. I'm too mean. I'm too tough. I make them train. I do too many drills. I do this. I do that. Whatever. I also caused Chicago Fire and the San Francisco earthquake, and, you know, I created 9/11 and whatever else you want. But the point is, if I want something done and you question it, I'll give you a reason for it. It's not, I'm not just doing this because I don't like you. I'm not doing this because I my wife's mad at me. I'm doing it for a logical reason, because I'm trying to make common sense and logic out of what we're doing here. That's all, you know. We're talking about the Bourne and Kofi tag team. At the very beginning, if you got on tape, you can go back and watch it. They were beating Bourne down a little bit, and Evan just came from 0 to 100 in no time at all. Smallest guy in the ring. Whoop, up, I'm up and firing back. Wow, did somebody stick an adrenaline needle in your ass, or exactly what happened there? You know? And I'll tell you another thing that drives me crazy. I'm no expert on MMA, and I don't know the names of everything, and full guard or half guard. And, I mean, I watch, you know, and I don't want to know, because I'm driving myself crazy enough with professional wrestling and fitness and nutrition in the gym. I don't need something else to beat me up mentally. But I enjoy it, you know, because it's a combination of a lot of things. But I do know this, call it a Muay Thai kick, call it whatever you want. I've seen MMA matches end with one kick. Evan, kick him in the fucking head again 6 more times, okay? And we'll watch him pop up. Which means your kicks suck. Or that guy has a steel, not a steel plate in his head. His head's made of steel. Which is it? You know? It's like in my company, if you hit a guy between the legs, by God, he better puke and it better be the end of the match.
That's, yeah. There's a reason in real sports you get a 5-minute timeout period if you so choose to have it, because, well, if you have them and they've ever been hitting them, yeah, you don't recover back quick from that.
No, well, you know, I mean, yeah, I've said to guys, I see you ever actually been kicked there very hard? You obviously, but it's just one of the first year that Harley and Scott Casey and I did the training camp at CAC in Vegas. We have little 5-minute matches, and we give the guys a finish and tell them to create some and just point to it. Okay, you're the heel, you're the baby face. Here's the finish. Go. You're not talking anything over. We want you to create something for us in this 5 or 6 minutes. Watch this one kid throw 4 nut shots in 5 minutes. All that tells me is you have no clue how to work. None, zero, zilch. You know, it's just, yeah, I mean, you know, if you had come into my dressing room and, you know, for the first time, okay, Mike, here's the deal. First of all, you don't lay a hand on my referee. You shove him, grab him, try to throw him down. He's going to disqualify you right then. Right then. I don't care if it's 2 minutes into a match you're supposed to do for 15 minutes and you're supposed to go over. It's not happening. He is going to disqualify you. My referee. Now, you can get nose to nose with him and argue, but don't touch him. He also, here's the other deal. He counts 5 as a disqualification. When he gets to 4, he's not going to stop and recite the Gettysburg Address for you backwards while you, You know, he's going to go to five, and again, the match is over early, then that's, he's, there's no heat on him. The heat is on you. You know, if there are no rules, how can you have heels?
Yeah, what are they breaking?
You can't, right? I mean, you know, Jimmy made, you know, we're talking about the Muay Thai kick. Cornette made the pile driver lethal in OVW. It would, if it was used at all, it was used once, maybe twice a year. But, I mean, the, and if you took a pile driver, then you were stretchered. If you'd have jumped up, Jimmy would have had a coronary. And chances are, if you were back on TV or back in the arena the next week, you had a cervical collar on, and you didn't work for a while. And I can tell you from being down there and being, you know, working with those guys so closely over a number of years, that if, you know, the referee is out of place or by accident he gets bumped on a, you know, on the two wrestlers collide with him or something and he goes down and that heel uses that pile driver, that building goes crazy because they know. They believe. Yes, I know it's a work, but they, but you know, they're buying in, and that, it's now you can't establish that in 15 minutes or in 2 hours or in 2 months maybe. You know, I was last week on Insider. We were talking about the tag team thing. Mike Johnson says how many months? I said minimum 6 months to make tag teams mean something, but you've got to work at it. Well, you know, you can't get a tag team over in 5 minutes. I'm not asking you to. Mike, tell me over the last 3 weeks how many matches on Raw, let's just use Raw, never mind SmackDown or anything else, how many matches over the last 3 weeks on that show were actually meaningful? And please don't tell me the Bella Twins against anybody, okay? So maybe two matches on each show in the 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that leaves you quite a bit of open space there. So give a tag team. Give your tag teams, if you're trying to build them, give them some time. And quit putting crap out there that, listen, I like, as old as I am, I love looking at pretty women. I really do. But when they're clumsy and sloppy and can't, and look stupid doing what they're doing, that takes away from their sexuality too.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. Then they're just generic chicks where it's like, well, I'd rather look at it in a magazine or models or something like that because, again, this time can be filled with something else. Yes, Kelly is pretty and all that stuff, and fine. But I don't need to see her when that's taking away time from, you know, pick and choose anything. And, again, you can get, well, you can't get tag teams as a division over, but you can actually get a tag team over in 5 minutes. Because I swear,
right,
if you put Miz and R-Truth with the Kings of Wrestling and you let them do what they're supposed to do, you know what? It will give you rapt attention because they're good at what they do and they're given a chance to do what they naturally do. World's Greatest Tag Team. It drives me nuts that Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin are not making WWE money.
Sure.
With that said,
sure,
just being a selfish fan, Ring of Honor, the fact that they're in Ring of Honor and the fact that, well, God damn it, I grew up on tag team wrestling. I love tag team wrestling. And it, at least artistically, I get that with them. That's why, I mean, Kings of Wrestling and the Briscoes and what ROH has done in Jim Cornette, you know, go figure, and the people that have been there with Kevin Kelly and Delirious and everybody else who's involved there of the All Night Express went from stripper party boys and Cornette, it turned them into growing up. Kenny King and Rhett Titus, and again, they've got a long way to go, but they hadn't been around that long. Kenny King's got a pretty good pedigree and obviously works hard, and they've turned them into something. And again, yes, you can't fix the whole division in 5 minutes, but you can actually make people believe it when it's presented properly. And I don't know, and I know we're going to run out of time here because we're only going to go too much longer here with the hour, but we've been talking about it since spring. They haven't had a contract. The ROH TV is coming up, and I believe that they were on the tapings. I'd have to go back and look. In fact, I'm almost positive they were. Kings of Wrestling and WWE, Hiro and Claudio, it could very well have, again, nobody's saying anything right now about anything, so I guess that could actually mean something's up, but Kings of Wrestling and WWE, if they're serious, what do you think? Because obviously they have had some issues with outsiders like Punk and things like that, but what would you do bringing the Kings of Wrestling in? Would you just have them go wreck shop right away? Or do you have to, will WWE make them, quote-unquote, their own first before they
You know, that whole thing is, we have to be, you know, you work for somebody else, so we got to make you look bad before we make you look good. Well, that's just stupid.
What is 50-50 booking? I get it to a point.
No,
with something,
well, here's the thing.
But don't
if
you have
I'm,
to be 100% awesome before you get 50-50
yeah, here's
booking?
Here's the thing. If I'm bringing Claudio and Hero in, it's because they got over. It's because they have a. It's because they're known. It's because. So why am I going to bring them in and beat them 5 straight weeks? Well, because we got to teach them a lesson. No, we don't have to teach them a lesson. We hired them because they are of value. Why do we devaluate them, you know, by doing something, well, you know, to humble, screw all that. If I've got the biggest company in the world that does what we do and nobody can top me, why am I so paranoid, for Christ's sake? You know, this is not a fraternity house. It's not hazing. I mean, listen, there's locker room. Hey, I'm not I was hazed as a kid, as a rookie. I know I've heard guys say, well, that this guy was a bastard and the way they treated me is. No, I was never, when I say never a strong advocate, I'd never got involved in hazing so much as a hazer. I was a hazy, you know, in my time. I just didn't want to get into that. Yeah, but it's part, you know, it happens in baseball and football and basketball and everything else. So, I mean, whatever. I mean, but when you bring in guys who are established, who have a fan base, who are written up in the magazines or talked about on the websites, you know, you don't devaluate them because it's like, well, we're great and, you know, we're going to make them better after we do. No, you're not. You're taking away from them. And you're exposing them. The bad part is the people who knew they were good when they were someplace else are still going to know they're good, but then you're going to insult those people who are coming over to watch your company, so you're allowed to piss enough of them off, they're not going to watch your company. And the people who have never seen these guys, why are they going to think they're great when you're beating the shit out of them every week?
Exactly. It's like what they would say with WCW after WWE bomb. And again, from Dusty Rhodes to Harley Race to anybody else who's ever been up there and been given something. Well, you know, WWE, Tyler Black, Ricky Steamboat Jr., Jon Moxley, the Kings of Wrestling, hey, it's okay. You own that stuff now. It's okay for you to treat it okay and make money
with
it.
Sure,
I mean, you know.
Well, you know, listen.
At some point, it's okay.
Yeah, my company here never drew 10,000 people, and it never was meant to. It was a developmental, it was an independent promotion. But we, you know, we ran a flea market not far from where I'm sitting right now where we'd put 600-700 people in there, you know. And when I say we did that, it was a combination of the kids that started here, some of the better independent kids that came here, plus some of the WWE and WCW talent. But the point I'm getting to here is when they said, well, cruiserweights don't draw, I beg to differ with you. I had a hell of a cruiserweight, and we had a cruiserweight title, and it was part of the storyline, and it was, and the tags were, and the, you know, and the heavyweight. But everybody, all three divisions, I won't say, I don't know if every how the fans actually looked at them as, well, this is equal with that being equal. But we had cruiserweight top main events, we had heavyweight main events, we had tag team main events, and we tried as equally as you can push everything at the same time to make everybody, because, well, Shannon Moore is not 10,000 pounds, so but look at what he's doing in his division, you know. So-and-so is a great tag team wrestler. Said, well, we're not putting him in singles. And if we put him out in singles, we edge a single guy over him, the announcers, who I happen to be one of, or whether it was Cornette and I or Kevin Kelly and I or Brock Guff and I, whoever the hell it happened to be, was the point was, hey, this guy's specialty is tag teams. He's kind of out of his element here, and so-and-so is taking advantage of that. You know, again, if you try to make sense out of things and things that you talk about make sense, then you can make people believe what you're saying. And that's my rant for tonight.
And you know what? That would be a fine way to end it, and I'm not going to try to follow it up with any drivel that I would have. So, Les, what do you got coming up this week as far as, obviously, you know, about your eyes and everything, as far as you're scheduled with all the other things that you do on the radio and everything?
Well, I'm going to cut my wrist and just – no. I'm going to Philadelphia at some point. I may have to reschedule. It'll be in October. It may be the end instead of the middle for CZW. We're doing a insider Wrestler's Eye Radio tomorrow with Mike Ebsenhart and Mike Johnson. I'm not sure what we're doing Saturday for the Observer because Doc was back in the hospital this past weekend. And, oh, by the way, I listened to Doc and Brian, and, yes, I am Doc's bitch when it comes to the pay-per-view prediction game. But I want to say Doc is my boy. I mean, I pick on him, you know, on the show, but that's part of what we do, you know. He has such a passion to do the show, and with his health the way it is, it would just be as easy for him to say, the hell with all this, you know. I don't need the aggravation. And I'm so in admiration of him wanting to do it, and his work he does for Brian, too. I just wanted to say that. But, you know, his health willing, we'll be doing a Wrestling Weekly this weekend for the Observer as well.
Doc is so awesome. And yeah, I don't know if people realize that or not, but God, he is awesome. And for those who didn't hear it, if you sign up to the site, you should sign up to the site, WrestlingObserver.com. Not for my show. Well, okay, a little bit for my show because Adam Summers is also a host, and you'll like him at least. The Big Audio Nightmare, where our muse is Japanese wrestling. It's what we talk about mostly, talked about a little bit. Dave Meltzer talked about a little bit with Brian this week about New Japan, too. It was nice to hear him say it because it's amazing. You'll be shocked. Dave Meltzer's name carries more weight than mine. So, but again, you know, talk about New Japan, you know, building good faith. And talked a lot about New Japan's big tour Adam and I did, and that's up on the site right now. And doing Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez this Sunday, maybe, possibly, I don't know. Brian will be doing it with someone if I'm not all hurricane batten down here at the beach. So I'm not sure if that'll happen, but no, that's it. And
I got an email too. Jackie Welch, Lester and Lucille's son, not the brother. You know, one of the original brothers, Welch brothers, was Jack too. This is Jackie, Roy Lee's brother. I understand is in a hospital in Florida with some heart problems. So everyone just keep him in their thoughts and their prayers. I just wanted to throw that in too, Mike.
Oh, God, please, yes. And again, out there too, everyone, give a little strength to Rich right now, who's just probably pulling his hair out, back at work and everything else, and hopefully back to normal with life and everything else next week here with us. And Les, thank you very much, and good night. And for everybody listening out there, thank you and good night.
Thank you, Michael.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.